Hello, Central Standard podcast listeners. This is Gina. I have a little message for you. Our team has been cooking up another podcast. We launched it just this week. It's called Midwesternish, and it's a way to get to know some thinkers and doers who live in this part of the country, starting in Kansas City. If you are a fan of Central Standard, you might notice that Midwesternish includes voices and stories from the radio show you already know and love. Midwesternish is weekly, it's shorter, it's more podcasty, and it'll make real life in the Midwest accessible to podcast listeners everywhere. So represent KC and subscribe to Midwesternish on iTunes, NPR One, or wherever you do that sort of thing. Spread the word, and thanks. Oh, write a review too. We want to know what you think. Now for our food show. Josh Eans owns a restaurant called Happy Gillis in Columbus Park. And you can get sandwiches there. But when Josh has a hankering for pastrami, he crosses downtown to go to a new place on the west side.
Hi, how are you?
Speak Sandwiches is the sandwich maker's sandwich shop, serving up basics, chicken salad, egg salad, tuna salad, and pastrami. It's on the corner of Southwest Boulevard, and a big open garage door looks right out onto the railroad tracks.
Did you want to have anything to drink with your pastrami here?
Tracy Zinn and Todd Schulte opened Speak late last year because they thought Kansas City was missing something.
Certainly Kansas City doesn't have a lot of delis or true, good old-fashioned sandwich shops around any longer.
This is how Todd makes his buddy Josh a pastrami sandwich.
This is our fancy toaster. You can raise it and lower it to get it near the bread or far away from the bread. All of our bread generally does get toasted for just a little bit. Maybe not in the sense of toasting it like a piece of toast, but we give it a little bit of warmth, a little bit of rejuvenation, and get the bread nice and waking up and ready to go for its sandwich. We use the deli mustard, pickled mustard seeds, our house-made pickles, thinly sliced, some fresh dill sprigs, our in-house smoked pastrami, and then we close it up.
Speak is expanding. They want to offer more specialties that harken back to the days of old-school Jewish delis. But why did those delis go away to begin with, and why are people suddenly reviving them now? We're kicking off our sandwich show on KCUR's Central Standard with the Reuben Renaissance. Our guest is Ted Merwin. He's the author of a book called Pastrami on Rye, an overstuffed history of the Jewish deli. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Your research must have been pretty fun for that book.
It was. It was a lot of fun, actually. I got to eat in delis all over the country, and I got to talk to a lot of people who had worked in the deli industry, either as deli owners or as people who were kosher sausage company executives or people who had worked in advertising.
Kosher sausage sounds a little like an oxymoron.
Why is that? Kosher sausage?
I guess sausage for I think of pork a lot of the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I mean, there's also, I mean, certainly beef sausage is something that's been very well established in Jewish culture. You know, Jews don't eat pork products. So all the kinds of sausages that Jews discovered when they first lived in the Rhine River Valley in Germany during the Middle Ages, they had to sort of transform into beef products instead of pork.
So here in Kansas City, over the last couple of decades, people did a lot of moaning and groaning about how we didn't have a great Jewish deli, which seemed odd to me because I grew up in Jewish delis and most of the kids I knew didn't ever go there. I mean, those places have all closed, and now a couple of new delis, like the one we just visited, have opened and everyone is super excited. Is this a trend nationwide or is it a Kansas City thing?
No, I think it's a trend nationwide. I think that the sandwich is something that a lot of people are discovering as something that's so infinitely adaptable that you can pretty much put anything between two slices of bread. And nowadays, with all of the kind of craze for artisanal food, for, you know, quote unquote, authentic food that's made according to age old recipes in ancient, using ancient preparation techniques, I think there's a kind of you know, rediscovered, you know, love affair for the sandwich, because it's something that, you know, you can usually make fairly inexpensively, and that you can put whatever you want to put into it.
When you say authentic, why do you say quote unquote authentic?
Well, I mean, this is actually something that I wrote about in my book. I mean, I think that the word authenticity, you know, is kind of very slippery, and we often try to persuade ourselves that we are doing things according to the way that they were done, you know, for generations, and that they were done in some, you know, far off place where people, you know, first invented these cooking techniques or these cooking implements and things like that. And I'm just never quite sure what that means, or whether it really matters so much. Actually, I think that we kind of make food in the way that is in consonance with our 21st century values. And if we want to, you know, sort of say that that's the way that it always was done, we really don't always know the way things used to be done or what period we want to go back to. You know, I mean, food has obviously been a part of human culture from the beginning. And actually, the sandwich has been, in particular, part of my culture, part of, you know, Jewish culture from the beginning. The first sandwich was actually invented by a rabbi.
I didn't know that.
And it's part of the Passover. Yeah, it's part of the Passover holiday that we just celebrated couple weeks ago.
The Hillel sandwich.
Where we actually ritually reenact this putting together of what was originally the meat of the Paschal sacrifice and the bitter herbs and the unleavened bread. And nowadays we do it a little bit differently, but we still call it the Hillel sandwich, and that is the first recorded sandwich in history.
So how would you define a Jewish deli? I mean, there are different aspects of any kind of food establishment. Like, one is the food itself, and then another would be the culture, the atmosphere, that kind of stuff. Let's start with the food.
I mean, the way I define a deli is really a place that's oriented around the selling of meat and the, you know, particular kinds of smoked and pickled meats that Jews, again, first appropriated into Jewish culture when they lived in Central Europe, and then also continued when they moved into Eastern Europe, continued to eat these kinds of foods that were not really a big part of their diet, were probably foods that were eaten only in small quantities on special occasions. But when Jews came to America in large numbers, starting at the end of the 19th century and into the beginning of the 20th, you know, these were the kinds of foods that really began to become very popular in the immigrant Jewish community, and then particularly for the children of immigrants who moved out of the Lower East Side of New York, who started to move into the outer boroughs of New York, moved into the rest of the country. And by the 1920s, by the period, you know, after the First World War, sandwiches in particular of all different kinds were incredibly popular. I have in my book that in the mid-1920s, there were more than 5,000 stores in New York City alone that specialized in sandwiches. And the drama critic George G. Nathan called them one of the leading industries of the country, taking precedence over soda water, candy, chewing gum, and the Saturday Evening Post. So I think that there's sort of a long history that Jews have with sandwiches, that New York has with sandwiches, and I think that's something that kind of spread to the rest of the country, because sandwiches were portable, because again they were, you know, so infinitely various. And
you can kind of make them on an assembly line.
Well, you can, and particularly for people who are, you know, going out to work or school and need to bring a meal with them that they can eat during the day, you know, which goes back really to the Victorian period, to when people first started working in factories. You know, it made sense for people to have sandwiches. What's new about, I think, the idea of the delicatessen or the sandwich store is the idea that you would actually go for a sit-down meal, and that it would be a sandwich.
Well, can we establish also just, I mean, this is a little less technical maybe, and a little more impressionistic. How would you describe the culture or atmosphere of, I guess I'd say, like, the first wave of American Jewish delis?
I would say a very casual kind of atmosphere. I mean, I think these were places where Jews could really, and non-Jews who patronized them as well, could really kind of let their hair down, could not have to worry about table manners, could eat with their hands, right? There's something about eating sandwiches which is very primitive. You don't need to use a knife and fork. You don't need to worry about etiquette. in the way that I think you would have to worry in a fancier restaurant. So Jews who are not yet really so assimilated into American society created the delicatessen as exactly a kind of space where they could hang out and be casual and be among their own and not have to worry about all of the, you know, really anti-Semitic attitudes that were circulating in American society.
The place that we visited just at the very beginning of this show has some Jewish deli classics and some Italian deli classics, which is kind of cool, I think. But what would you say is the difference between a Jewish deli and other kinds of delis? Is that an important difference, or is it all part of the same kind of trend?
I think it's all part of the same kind of trend. I mean, there are German and Italian and Polish. There are all different kinds of places that sell takeout food. And that's essentially what a delicatessen is. I mean, delicatessens didn't start as restaurants. They started as basically gourmet takeout shops in Germany and then in the United States. So I think what's interesting now is that you have this kind of fusion that you're talking about where you have, for example, in Miami, you have, you know, Jewish and Cuban food that's coming together. You know, in
they
other
have
places,
a sandwich, right? The Jubin.
Yes, they have the Jubin. Yes, in Miami Beach. Yeah, Josh's Deli, which has roast pork on it. You know, you see in Atlanta, for example, there's a deli called the General Muir, which is doing sort of interesting mashup of Jewish and Japanese, you know, pancakes and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing this. I mean, certainly there are these, you know, there are kosher Chinese restaurants where you can get sandwiches or you can also get Chinese food. So, yeah, I think that's part of the kind of the current melting pot or whatever you want to call it. That's, you know, people really are into being able to have a whole range of different kinds of ethnic food. And that's the whole fusion cuisine that we're seeing now. So it's almost seen as too limiting to go to a place and only have one particular style of food.
What happened to the original delis?
The original delis, when you say the original ones, you mean the ones from the immigrant period or from the later periods?
I guess, I mean, thinking in terms of Kansas City, There was a place, it was called the New York Bakery and Delicatessen, and people from New York actually would be likely to have visited this place and recognized some aspects of the Jewish deli, but maybe kind of scoffed at others. Like the bagels in particular, I think a New Yorker might have been like, not a bagel. But regardless of that, I mean, culturally, the people behind the counter they spoke Yiddish, you know, like there was a kind of grittiness to the atmosphere on some level. And that place, you know, along with, I think, throughout the country, as you've been saying, like a lot of those kinds of places fell out of favor for a while. Everyone's excited about reviving the concept, but what happened to the thing we're reviving?
Well, you're right. So there's a whole confluence of different factors. I mean, you know, one big factor was that, you know, a lot of these were mom and pop businesses for the most part. And, you know, that immigrant generation had to work very, very hard in order to establish these kinds of businesses. And they didn't want their children, nor did their children, for the most part, want to follow in their footsteps. When Jews were able to become doctors and lawyers and so on, then they didn't want to go into this kind of backbreaking occupation of serving food. So there was definitely a big generational shift that took place from, as you say, sort of the Yiddish-speaking immigrants to their English-speaking children and grandchildren. There were also big shifts that happened in American society. I mean, you know, this is kind of food that people really stopped eating for the most part. I mean, there was a huge interest in eating healthy food that really kicked off starting in the 1970s and in fitness and exercise and so on. And so people weren't eating food that was high in cholesterol and fat and sodium and so on.
The cow tongue sandwich fell out of favor.
So the cow tongue sandwich fell out of favor, right. The other thing is that there was a lot of other kinds of ethnic food that started to, I mean, as other kinds of immigrants, particularly Asian immigrants, came to the United States, there were other foods that Jews and others discovered that they had never known before. I mean, maybe people serving in World War II to a certain extent got exposed to other kinds of cultures and other kinds of cuisines. But for the most part, it was really, you know, these massive waves of immigration that started in the 60s and 70s that, you know, brought all kinds of other kinds of food to our shores. And then, you know, why would you want to eat the same food all the time when you could eat a different food every night?
You've been quoted as saying that the new delis are attempts to recreate an experience of a previous generation, but without the grittiness. Can you explain that?
Well, I think the grittiness was part of what I was saying earlier. I mean, the sort of the casual vibe, the, you know, I mean, a lot of these, you know, restaurateurs, for want of a better word, didn't have a lot of money. They weren't making, you know, fancy restaurants. That wasn't part of their vocabulary.
They also had a really different approach to customer service than I think what is
yes.
maybe.
Yes, they had a totally different. I mean, I write about that in my book. I mean, there was actually an expectation. I mean, in certain Jewish delis, that when you went in, when you walked into the door, you would be kind of insulted and denigrated by the waiter or by the guy behind the counter. There was a paradoxically, I think, kind of comfort that Jews in particular derived from being treated like that, because that was very reminiscent of the kind of childhoods that a lot of them had, the kind of home lives that they had, where there was stereotypically a lot of, you know, if you watch like a Woody Allen movie where you see everyone sort of shouting and screaming at each other, you know, that's kind of like, I think, what it was like for a lot of people. There was a sort of no holds barred quality to the family interactions. So, yeah, no, I mean, this is not what you would see nowadays. I mean, I've certainly spoken to deli owners and asked them about the way they train their wait staff. And they said, there's no way that I'm going to train them to be nasty. I mean, that's just not the way we do things nowadays. And people want to eat in a really nice, clean, you know, upscale type of atmosphere.
We have different expectations now.
Yeah, and to the extent that it's about nostalgia, I mean, as I was saying, the heyday of the deli was really in the interwar period. It was really when, you know, Art Deco was all the fashion, and when, you know, there was this real romance with, you know, the new urban styles and things like that. And so, you know, to the extent that delis, you know, try to be a throwback to that, then they often, you know, they want to remind people not of their immigrant origins or whatever, but they want to remind them of, you know, the period in which they actually started to become more successful.
How old are you? Because you sound young, and I kind of expected you to be an old guy.
I'm 48.
That's not okay. I don't consider that old. And I'm curious. I mean, is it possible to be nostalgic for something you never experienced yourself?
Yes, I think there is. I mean, Donald Weber is a scholar who writes about American Jewish culture. And in one of his books, he talks about being nostalgic for your parents' nostalgia. And I always think about that. But for me, I mean, maybe I have an old soul, or maybe it's that I grew up with a very strong connection to my grandparents. And so, you know, to a certain extent, I've tried to perpetuate not my parents' Jewish culture, which was very assimilated and very secularized. And, you know, in their minds, very cosmopolitan and sophisticated, but also, to my mind, not that Jewish anymore, and sort of go back to the world of my grandparents, for whom Judaism was a really, you know, just kind of woven into the very soul of their being.
Ted Merwin, author of Pastrami on Rye, An Overstuffed History of the Jewish Deli, with us from Dickinson College. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next on KCUR's Central Standard, the food critics are in session. Call to recommend your favorite sandwich in town, whether it comes from a deli or somewhere else. 816-235-2888. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and the food critics are here to talk about sandwiches. You can join in by calling 816-235-2888. The critics this morning are Charles Frouza. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Gina.
Jenny Vergara.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And a new critic at the table, Carlton Logan. Hi, Carlton. Woo-hoo! Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start by establishing some parameters around what constitutes a sandwich. Are we counting wraps? I personally don't count wraps because I think they're non-committal. I think you have to decide whether you're making a burrito or a sandwich.
I think you're right. And plus, don't you think a sandwich should have bread?
Well, that's another question I have. Are there other possible sandwich foundations?
Well, buns.
I mean, buns
rolls.
Are bread.
But, like, sliced sandwich bread is one thing.
Okay.
Rolls and, you know, buns are kind of another thing. But I think all of that, I mean, as long as there's kind of two put together and something in the middle, I'm with you on wraps. Wraps are like this, you know, early 90s throwback that we need to just get rid of, I think. I'm done with the wrap.
Wraps are out.
Yep.
All right. Anything else we need to clarify? Like, okay,
Here's one. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
In the way that in the big picture, hot dogs and hamburgers are sandwiches. But I think in this discussion, they're not.
I think they're their own category.
Yeah, they are their own category. Mm-hmm.
There's
I agree.
Okay, we all agree. No wraps, no hot dogs, no hamburgers. But otherwise, if there are two things with another thing in the middle, it's a sandwich?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's first of all establish some iconic Kansas City sandwiches. I mean, there are a couple from Houston's that people used to rave about. And of course, those are gone. But what would be some iconic Kansas City sandwiches that are still around?
Well, it's not on my list, but it is on Jenny's. Well, it's on, forgive me, Carlton's. The Z-Man sandwich at Joe's.
Gotta go there.
Carlton, tell us about it.
The Z-Man is, it's a barbecue sandwich. And the kicker for me is the onion rings. The onion rings give it that great crunch. So you've got
the onion rings are on the sandwich?
On the sandwich, yes.
Whoa.
So it's the texture, it's the barbecue sauce, it's the great meat.
What kind of meat?
Brisket. Beef brisket.
We should also mention, too, that Joe's is doing a vegetarian version of that has a portobello mushroom in place of the meat.
I noticed that.
Mm-hmm. Which is really good, I might add. Mm-hmm. Really good.
So, Carlton, what makes this an iconic Kansas City sandwich?
Well, Kansas City is barbecue. So any sandwich that fits into that barbecue realm kind of instantly becomes a classic. And Joe's, you know, is not... The foundation of barbecue is, of course, Gates, Bryant's, and I think Joe's kind of comes in third as in terms of popularity in the
Whoa,
city.
Whoa, you are stirring up a controversy.
Look at him.
Go on. No, please continue.
So I think it fits that barbecue classic that Kansas City loves. Kansas City loves barbecue.
A listener reached out on Facebook to nominate the Hook'em Up at M&M Bakery on East 31st Street. And I wonder
I
if you would
get there.
Yeah, I wonder if you would consider this an iconic Kansas City sandwich. I have heard a lot about it. I'd say it's legendary. I have plans to try it, but I haven't done it yet.
It's great.
It's good.
No, Tell us about it.
Well, we should say that the M&M Bakery is a venerable, almost historic place on 31st Street.
Yes.
31st and Prospect-ish, I guess I would say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a little delicatessen. In fact, it used to be M&M delicatessen. And all of their sandwiches are great. I'm trying to think why Hook 'em Up is especially famous, though. It's big.
It is big.
Well, we should say, like, if we have a listener who is a huge Hook 'em Up fan... We could use your expertise at 816-235-2888. So I want to ask each of our critics, if you had to pick a current favorite sandwich in Kansas City, what would it be? Carlton?
My current classic is, or favorite, is the Espinaca grilled cheese at Best Regards Bakery and Cafe. It is a sandwich that is gooey. It is a sandwich that has that wonderful taste of the espinaca dip that everyone loves at a Mexican restaurant. They make their own country bread. So it's this gooey, spicy, wonderful sandwich.
You had me at gooey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there chicken on the sandwich?
No chicken.
Okay.
No.
But then why is it called the Espinaca Grilled Chicken Sandwich?
It's got all that cheese. It's got the spinach. It's got the tomatoes. And I think basically it's the spinach that gives it the espinaca.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is at Best Regards Bakery and Cafe. And just generally, where is that?
It's at 119th and Glenwood.
All right. Charles, what would be your current favorite sandwich?
Oh, that's a tough one. I love almost all the sandwiches at Happy Gillis down in the, it's not really the River Market. What would you call that, Jenny?
Columbus Park.
Columbus Park. And the last really great sandwich I had there was, and I don't know if they even still offer it, was this pulled pork sandwich with a smoked chili, kimchi, and miso on ciabatta. And It was so, so good.
That does not sound like a sandwich you would order. But I would love, because it's kind of Asian-y, and I don't see
I love Asian.
Do you?
Yeah, if it's well done, yeah, well prepared.
It sounds delicious. I would love
it
that
was
sandwich.
Delicious.
What did you like about it, Charles?
I like pulled pork. It's one of my favorite things. And I like the fact that it was kind of spicy, kind of smoky, kind of different. So, yeah.
Kind of spicy, kind of smoky,
kind of now, kind of wow.
And this is at Happy Gillis. And you said that you like the sandwiches there in general. Do you have anything to tell us about the Happy Gillis approach to sandwich making overall?
Well, I think they tend to be kind of big and good-sized. You know, and there's nothing worse than a skimpy sandwich.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, and I think they do a really good job of kind of melding these really kind of hot, interesting ingredients and flavors into, you know, a very typical, you know, sandwich delivery system, if you will. I mean, if there's a lot of boring sandwiches out there, and this is not the place to go for that. They
right.
have really creative, interesting sandwiches.
Jenny, what is your current favorite sandwich in Kansas City?
Well, I know that it was mentioned in the top of the hour, but Speak Sandwiches. I think Todd Schulte is doing an amazing job at Speak in terms of his little walk-in deli. And I would have to say the pastrami sandwich there has my vote all day long.
Does he make his own pastrami?
He does make his own pastrami, and it's sliced thick, but it's so tender. And he gets his bread from 1900 Barker Bakery in Lawrence, which he was just nominated for James Beard, and, you know, grainy mustard, and it's the right amount of everything, I would tell you, very balanced, and it's just, you know, plain bread. It's not on a giant roll. It doesn't have a huge bun. It feels very authentic, and it's just flavorful. I mean, it's one of those things where if I'm thinking about a sandwich, my thoughts always go there, and I've had several things. I mean, he even does, like, tuna salad and egg salad. I mean, very simple things as well, but he does it with such quality that it's just worth the trip.
So we have a tweet from a listener who says, sounds weird, but it's great. Betty Rogers from Fritz's. It's got brisket, ham, and bacon on it, so no shortage of meat, with artichokes, roasted red peppers, onion, mustard, and mayo.
God, it sounds fabulous. The Martha Rogers? Betty Rogers.
Who's Betty Rogers?
I don't know. Roy Rogers'
first
wife? I was
going to say, that's a mashup there if I ever heard it.
But the meat-on-meat sandwich has, you know, has its fans out there.
Right.
Any other sort of meat-lover sandwiches we should talk about?
I think we have to mention the Cuban sandwich at the Sundry, which is ham and roasted pork.
It's really good.
As well
really
as good. Mustard cheese. Again, another sandwich that doesn't have a giant bun to it. You know, it's kind of more flattened and grilled. Griddled, I guess, maybe would be a better way to describe it.
Is it real Cuban bread?
Mm-hmm.
Cuban style?
Yeah, it is. Actually, it's kind of an interesting mashup. I don't know that I would call it hugely traditional. It's more like a bit of a pita that's been griddled to me. It's very soft bread and on the flatter side.
What would delicious. Be a traditional Cuban sandwich?
There's the name for the roll that it is, and it's kind of football shaped and about the size of your palm.
And pretty crispy.
Yeah, it's very crispy on the outside and super soft on the inside. And so that's the perfect kind of griddling, you know, have all those moist ingredients in there and then griddle the top and bottom. So
and then this one is set apart a little bit, and it's at the Sundry. And mm-hmm. what makes you like this one especially?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to find Cubans. We don't see it too much. I mean, they're occasionally on menus. I like this one because I like it's a slim profile. Like I said, it's not you're not jumping into a giant piece of bread. I think with carbs and everything, it's kind of tough to sandwiches. If I overlook a sandwich or if I don't get a sandwich, it's because the bread. I don't want all the bread. But so this one has the right amount of ingredients. I would tell you meat to cheese to pickle to mustard to bread. It's all good.
And so the Sundry is in the Crossroads, we should say.
Yes.
And Carlton, you are recommending something from Marco Polo's that has sausage in it. So that's
yes.
kind of a meat lover's thing.
Which, if we go back to if a hot dog is a sandwich or not, this is an Italian sausage in a sandwich.
Well, it's iconic, actually, for Kansas City.
I was going to say, an Italian sandwich would have to be somewhere on the list of iconic sandwiches, whether
right.
it's cold cut, you know, Italian cold cuts, or whether it's a meatball sub or an Italian sausage. I absolutely agree.
We have a tweet from a listener who is recommending BRGR at Power and Light, not for a burger, ironically enough. But for a lobster grilled cheese, which sounds amazing.
It does.
Now, the fancy grilled cheese is kind of a trend as well.
Yeah, a big trend right now. Comforting, soothing.
Crunchy, ooey gooey.
Yeah, probably not all that good for you. But
I just had an excellent one at Andre's. And it had prosciutto and mustard and a little bit of Gruyere cheese
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, on a bun. It was delicious.
Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, listen, it doesn't matter if the grilled cheese is as basic as the kind served at, what am I trying to say here? Winstead's has a very basic grilled cheese.
Oh, yeah.
I like it on rye. But I like the fancier ones, too. For one thing, they have more cheese. Mm-hmm.
I can't get down with lobster and cheese together. I'm struggling with that, I have to say. I want them separate.
So before, we're going to take a break shortly, but let's get one last critic recommendation before we do that.
I want to put a shout out since we just stepped off the lobster train. I love the traditional lobster roll sandwich at Jack's. Mm. It is as close to, I suppose, Maine as you want to get. In Kansas City, and it, you know, it's very, very light. It's not overly dressed. It has, you know, it's a soothing, lovely sandwich.
What is a traditional lobster roll? Because people who live here maybe haven't even had one. I haven't had one.
It's just, Jenny, you could back me up on this, or Carlton. It doesn't have a lot of mayonnaise. It's very simple, and there can't be a lot of stuff in it. It should be just really lobster. A little bit of mayonnaise on a buttered roll. Mm-hmm.
Usually there might be a touch of celery or onion, very, very little. That's one way to do it. There's another style of lobster roll that's butter-based. It's like a browned butter base where the lobster is just tossed in butter and there's no mayo or that. So.
And where do you get one in Kansas City?
Jack's.
All right. Well, keep your sandwich recommendations coming. We'll turn to those soon. When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll stop by a newish sandwich place north of the river, and we'll hear more local favorites. I'm Gina Kaufman. Back in a minute. Just off North Oak Traffic Way, there's a tiny Vietnamese eatery. It's sandwiched inconspicuously between a pet spa and a nail salon.
Yeah, it is. A little strip.
Jimmy Fan opened Bun Me Fan a year ago. And yes, that is actually how you pronounce it.
The name, my wife just wanted a name where everybody can say the Bun Me at first sight. So we spelled it in a funny way. It's easy to say, and then in a sense, we are Bun Me Fan. So that name just comes together.
Banh mi is a Vietnamese sandwich layered with fresh, crunchy vegetables, jalapeno, cucumber, pickled carrot, daikon radish, and cilantro. Customers then pick a meat. Traditionally, the star of the banh mi sandwich is either head cheese, which is a meat jelly made from the ears and snout of a pig, or braised pork belly. Most people put it on a French baguette, but Jimmy does things differently.
We twist it with the BTs, which is the bánh tiêu, the donuts. That's a Vietnamese beignet, kind of. Just want to try something new with that as a sandwich. You just wanted to try something different.
Indeed. Jimmy grew up in Wichita, but his mom is a chef in Vietnam. Her home cooking gave him a taste for that style of cuisine.
I think that area, there's not too many people around here that's very familiar with bánh mi yet. So I'm hoping to give them a new sense of taste with the what we have. Just trying to give Kenzie a new option on sandwiches, something new to try.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is a Friday food show on KCUR's Central Standard. The critics are Charles Ferruza, Jenny Vergara, and Carlton Logan. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
So we just heard about a sandwich that is kind of new on the scene in our area, but it's not a new sandwich. It's become popular very quickly. The bun mi. Who here enjoys a good bun mi sandwich?
I love it. It's one of my favorite sandwiches.
And Charles, you wanted to recommend the ones they have at this very place.
Yes. Yeah, I was turned on to it by a restaurant owner in town who lives north of the river. And I'll tell you, there's so many good things there at this place that sometimes it's hard to order just one thing. In fact, I hardly ever do. But I can't remember where
it's a two-sandwich lunch?
You take one home, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
I do like their like beignet style buns because they're interesting, but I still prefer the crunch of a good baguette. And I'm trying to remember where they get their baguettes. I think it's Le Monde. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but mm-hmm. yeah. And Le Monde Bakery, which is also in North Kansas City, it's another great place for lunch. But they do have don't they have balmy sandwiches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Occasionally they
do. Yeah.
Well, let's talk to Lynn in Overland Park. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
What can you share with us? What's your sandwich to recommend?
Well, I'd like to recommend food down on West 17th.
That's the FUD food.
Yes, FUD. Their menu is entirely vegan and mostly raw, but they have like 18 different sandwiches on their menu. And my two favorites are the Jack Reuben and the Jack Barbecue.
What do you like about them?
I think they're the closest thing that I've found to the real thing without actually including any meat or dairy products. And it's been a while since I've had the real thing, but to the best of my taste buds knowledge, it's the closest thing that I've found out there.
Well, thanks, Lynn. You know, we talked about the meat lover sandwiches, and Lynn is offering an alternative to those at Food. Anywhere else? Anyone else have a vegetarian sandwich to recommend?
I do. Now, I like this vegetarian sandwich because it is so old school. The very first vegetarian sandwich I ever had was in the 1970s, which dates me. But
Sprouts, cream cheese, mm-hmm. yeah.
tomato, cucumber. Mm-hmm. And the Classic Cookie Cafe in Waldo has, you know, that kind of old world, old school vegetarian sandwich that has sprouts, avocado, cucumber, herbed cream cheese, lettuce. And, you know, there's something very soothing about that sandwich. Mm-hmm. It's got all these healthy components. I don't know how healthy it really is, but you think it's healthy, and so you don't mind ordering some cookies afterwards.
Does it taste fresh? When you describe it, that's what it sounds like.
It tastes like a salad on bread. That's the cool thing.
I always think that's traditionally called a California sandwich, by the way. But I always think of like ladies who lunch and finger sandwiches when I think of like crisp, cool, vegetarian-based sandwiches, just really simple.
And that's, I mean, the trend in vegetarian sandwiches is kind of moving away from that in some level. There's like the really savory mushrooms and things, just people finding alternatives to.
I love grilled and roasted vegetables on a vegetarian sandwich. I mean, yeah, I mean, definitely vegetarian sandwiches have evolved beyond the California sandwich.
Agreed.
And that's a good thing. But every once in a while, you want one.
Somewhere between us discovering umami in mushrooms and the huge avocado trend right now where everything has an avocado on it.
Knock the avocado. I like the avocado.
I'm down with it. In fact, that's what I had for breakfast this morning was avocado toast. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely, and, you know, it's just the place and age and stage that we're living in here in Kansas City.
Carlton, you have recommended a sandwich at McLean's Market, which is a place that's changed a lot lately, but you are recommending a real classic there, the chicken salad sandwich.
Yes, and it sort of fits into that, what Charles was describing, that fresh flavor. It's a chicken salad, but it has carrots and it has red clover sprouts on it. And
what?
It is a, yes, red clover sprouts. It's a very thick bread as well. So I don't know, Jenny, if you'd like it as much.
No. I like the bread. It just doesn't like me. Sticks to all the wrong places.
And it's a wonderful multigrain bread, and it does have that fresh flavor.
You know, what makes this particular chicken salad sandwich stand out to you? Because that's something that you can find in so many places, and what makes it just rise above the rest in the pack?
It's a basic chicken salad, so it doesn't have curry. It doesn't have raisins and nuts. It's a chicken salad with basic dressing, but the sprouts and the carrots really add a great texture in the bread.
Let's talk to Steve and Miriam. Hi, Steve. What are the sandwiches you want to tell us about?
Hi, good morning. How are y'all?
Good. How are you?
All right. So I wanted to give a shout-out to Breakfast Sandwich at Heirloom Bakery in Brookside. Scott and Kate over there make an amazing breakfast sandwich on a cheddar chive biscuit. usually egg, and then whatever you want to put on it. It is really, really fantastic.
What is fantastic about it? Because, again, the breakfast sandwich, you can find a breakfast sandwich in a lot of places, but this one inspired you to call.
Well, I would say that the size of it makes it a meal and a half, and from the fact that it's going to be locally sourced egg and locally sourced greens and locally sourced meat and veggies, whatever you want to put on it, everything just about it screams local and organic, and it's just it's what they do at Heirloom, and it's terrific.
Okay, and did you have another sandwich recommendation before we move along?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I wanted to kind of argue with your panelists. Everything that they're saying today is really, really spot on, except for one, because they talked about wraps being out. And I don't know about you, but I kind of consider the Hero sandwich or Gyro a wrap, and Hibachi House down at River Market makes a falafel sandwich that is it's my go-to for an afternoon quick lunch, and just yesterday, as a matter of fact.
So, tell us about that sandwich. What is so good about it?
Well, it's not heavy. It's light, but it's got great flavor, and their falafel is probably the best in town. It's, they pile it on there, and then they just add this great sauce and a variety of veggies, whatever they have for the day. And so it's, for a quick on-the-go meal with a Mediterranean flavor, you can't go wrong. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you, Steve.
All right. Two more things.
One, oh, no. Steve, I'm so sorry. We're going to have to move on, but I really appreciate your call.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else have like a falafel or Hero sandwich they want to recommend?
I love falafel sandwiches.
I don't think falafel. I don't think a gyro sandwich or a pita bread sandwich is a wrap at all.
I agree with you. Because
I think tortillas are a wrap.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think pita bread qualifies as bread, thus making it a sandwich.
I agree.
Yes.
Even if it is wrapped up together.
Right.
Within the pita.
But, I mean, wrapped, folded over and over. I mean, wrapped to me says more than one fold.
And not really bread.
Right. So pita counts. We've got a few
counts.
Tweets, and I want to share those. We've got someone tweeting that we should try out the Bite in the River Market, with a personal favorite being a sandwich called El Momo, which is roasted pork, habanero, cucumber, pickled onion, and cilantro.
Those guys have a huge following.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that love the Bite. And unfortunately, again, it's another place that, M&M and that place I got to get into.
You'll love M&M. It's classic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, the folks at the Bite, they're doing kind of interesting ethnic takes on sandwiches that are really good mashups, really fun.
We've also got recommendations for Il Saro at Bella Napoli in Brookside. That one's a spicy, crunchy bread full of Italian goodness, says our tweeter. And then also the Burnt End Grilled Cheese at the Grand Falloon. Burnt
wow.
End Grilled Cheese.
That's a must, yeah.
Okay. Jenny, talk to us about, you've got a turkey sandwich on your list, and we have not heard about a single turkey sandwich.
Yeah. So this is at Black Dog Coffee House in Lenexa, and Ibis Bakery obviously is the shares the space, if you will, kind of next door. And they've really opened up the two spaces so you can go in. I mean, Black Dog was kind of known for coffee and these really thick slices of toast that Ibis was actually making the bread for. Now they've expanded into lunch. And they're doing, soup, salad, sandwich kind of stuff. But the sandwiches come on that really thick, lovely Ibis bread. And I had either turkey or a ham sandwich. I'm pretty sure it was turkey. And it was really seasonal. It was fall. It had some cheddar cheese that was melted. It was like a grilled or griddled sandwich. Melted cheddar cheese on turkey with like apple slices that had been cooked with some cinnamon just to make a little bit. And I believe there was a touch of like spicy mustard on there too. It was really good, really comforting. I enjoyed it.
You have just the tiniest bit of time if you still want to recommend a sandwich at 816-235-2888. We're going to turn now to Jim in South Kansas City. Jim, what would you like to recommend?
Well, I had a turkey pastrami sandwich at a little place that I just discovered called V's. And they're in the 8,000 block of Paseo. What I love about this place is they bake all their own bread on the premises. And so I bought a loaf of egg bread to take home after I had the sandwich. And not only are they a sandwich shop and a really sort of old-fashioned place, nothing fancy, kind of a straight-ahead delicatessen out of 30 or 40 years ago. But they're also a bakery, and they have wonderful donuts, and they're open at 6 in the morning. So a donut, a cup of coffee, sandwich
to go?
Yes.
Thank you so much, yes. Jim. That was called V's?
V's, yes.
Like letter V?
Yeah. Well, and Carlton, you're recommending a Philly cheesesteak. We haven't heard anything about those today either.
There's an interesting story there. I found a Philly cheesesteak that I finally like.
Are you from Philadelphia?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
But I just kept hearing things about the Philly cheesesteak, and I didn't get it until I went to Grinders this week. And I am a convert.
You are a brand new convert.
I had a culinary conversion, yes.
Tell us about this sandwich.
Well, of course, the Philly cheesesteak is typically like a top round that's grilled and it's chopped up and it has onions and peppers and mushrooms and this cheese. And what I didn't like about it is sometimes they put Cheese Whiz on it.
Because that's how it was invented.
Yes. I'm not a Cheese Whiz fan, but I did try it with the Cheese Whiz and it was okay. It was okay, but I finally found one that wasn't dry. I think that was the problem. I was getting a lot of cheesesteaks that were dry.
So, and this one made the difference for you.
Yes.
All right. So, a religious experience with a sandwich,
yes,
at Grinders. That's significant praise. Jenny, tell us about, as long as we're at pizzerias that serve sandwiches, tell us about some sandwiches you like at Johnny Joe's.
Yeah, so the two guys that are in there cooking at Johnny Joe's have started the Bay Boys Specialty Sandwich Company, and they do Dutch Crunch Rolls. So this is a kind of a regional specialty, and the top is like kind of patchwork quilt, very crunchy, and they're doing about 4 to 5 sandwiches popping up inside of Johnny Joe's on Mondays and Saturdays from 11 to 2. And these sandwiches are totally craveable. I mean, just really excellent. I can't get around that bread. I go for the bread, and whatever the special of the day is what I get. But really, really good sandwiches. Well worth a trip to Johnny Joe's.
And Jenny, it is not yet summer, but tomato season will be upon us not too long from now, and you are recommending a BLT.
Yes, actually, so this uses a fried green tomato instead of a red tomato, so you could kind of have this anytime you wanted. But this is down in the West Bottoms kitchen, down in the West Bottoms, and they have a BLFGT, which, bacon, lettuce, fried green tomato. And the tomato is in cornmeal, dusted in cornmeal and fried. It's got a bacon, thick cut, roasted jalapeno whipped goat cheese, and greens on a brioche bun. It's just absolutely fantastic if you like a BLT.
So, and Jenny, tell us also about the pork tenderloin sandwich at Kitty's.
Well, you'll notice I put the words world famous next to it because I'm going to go ahead and just nominate it for that kind of accolades here on the show. But this, I just recently had it again, and it's one of those where two pork tenderloins that are tempura fried, so really crunchy, crispy on the outside, two patties stacked, not too huge, soft bun, doused in hot sauce. I mean, it's craveable. I absolutely love it. Cash only if you decide to go.
Hey, Larry, in Independence.
Yes.
We want to get you in here. What's your recommendation on our way out?
Momo's Grill Panini in Independence. It's on Nolan Road, just on the north side of I-70. They're just a real basic panini, meat and cheese, but they've got a grilled cheese sandwich that is great. It's cheddar, Swiss, and provolone together, and I highly recommend it.
Well, thanks, Larry. And Charles, take us not too far from there to a drive-in sandwich.
Oh, yeah. It's not everybody loves loose meat sandwiches. I'm a fan of them on occasion.
I love them.
Define the loose meat sandwich.
Well, like, you know, I think they're better known these days as sloppy joes, sort of, because they're crumbly.
But they don't have the tomatoey sauce.
They don't have the sauce. No.
Well, Mugs Up has a great sauce. And if you get cheese on it, it's called the Whiz Burger.
And the drive-in atmosphere?
Fabulous. And they make their own root beer.
All right. Mugs Up Root Beer Drive-In, and you're recommending the loose meat sandwich.
The Whiz Burger. It's not really a burger.
All right. Breaking our own rules, Charles.
I know.
That's okay. Our time is up. We'll have the official KCUR guide to the best sandwiches in Kansas City online later today at kcur.org. Thanks so much for helping us get that together. Charles Ferruza, thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Charles's reviews are in the Shawnee Mission Post and the Independent. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, it's been fun.
Yeah, thank you.
And Carlton Logan, great debut.
Thank you.
Carlton is a writer for kcfoodguys.com and an administrator for the Facebook group Kansas City Eats. Over the weekend, you can catch up on any of the shows you missed this week at kcur.org/centralstandard. Also, check out the new podcast, Midwesternish. It's hosted by me and produced by a lot of the people you know and love from the Central Standard team. And that team is Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman, over and out. Have a great weekend.